couple special acknowledgments on Kathy Parmentier, our guest conductor for today, and also author Carl Skold wrote that song. How are you, Carl? Allowing us to prove that UUs can sing UU gospel music if somebody will just write it. Now we have it. Do you know the hymn? I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. Know that one?
Yeah.
One of my favorites. Yeah. I know, I say that all the time. I have a lot of favorites. If you really want to get chills, listen to the Nina Simone recording. I won't try to imitate her. I wish I could break all these chains holding me. And then maybe my favorite line, a little different than Simone sings it. I wish I could say all the things I could say. What would help us to say what we could say? What would help us along in our knowledge and wisdom and courage? One thing we do to help ourselves along is we come here to explore and discover what we think and what we believe, what our experiences mean, what we want to commit to. Compelled by a longing, I wish. We come here, we seek out practices and people that will help us to say all the things we could say once we discovered what they were. Today we have the joy of welcoming new members formally into our congregation. And it is a good time to ask ourselves, what are we doing? What are they doing in joining here? What are we doing in being participants in this community? And it seems like a good time as well to launch a series of sermons on our seven principles, which unbelievably I've never given before in my oh so many years of ministry now. And you can pick up a copy of the principles for yourself out on the pamphlet rack. There's a nice little card that folds over. Really handy for keeping in your wallet or keeping by your door. I know somebody who keeps them by the door so that when somebody comes and tries to give her, you know, a wake or the watchtower or whatever, she says, I'll take yours if you'll take mine. So very handy for those Saturday morning visitors. And also, apropos to things in this sermon, I'll be writing jealous circle sessions about each of these meditations so that I hope people will speak to each other about what these principles mean to all of you. But we're beginning in the middle, the fourth principle, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. There are at least four words of such richness in that principle that I could go on at some length about any of them. Truth, meaning, free, responsible. I'm going to talk mostly about those last two because the interaction between them is so interesting. Now, it's very important, clearly, it was very important to the people who drafted the principles and who approved them, the General Assembly of some 30 years ago, to affirm both of those things, freedom and responsibility. Responsibility without freedom would be a return to the dogma that we have left behind as a faith tradition and as individuals, many of us. A betrayal of the human spirit's longing to explore. It would be a fettering of our ability to make great discoveries. And freedom without responsibility would be mere license. Howard Thurman, one of the great preachers and spiritual leaders of the 20th century, wrote, "There is a medley of confusion as to the meaning of personal freedom. For some, it means to function without limitations at any point, to be able to do what one wants to do and without hindrance. This is the fantasy of many minds, particularly those that are young. For others, personal freedom is to be let alone, to be protected against any force that may move into the life with a swift and decisive imperative. For still others, it means to be limited in one's power over others only by one's own strength, energy, and perseverance. The meaning of personal freedom, he continues, is found in none of these. They lack the precious ingredient, the core of discipline and inner structure without which personal freedom is a delusion. Freedom and responsibility, it seems, are partners. Now, a great spiritual and philosophical movement arose in the crucible of Unitarianism of the early 19th century, Transcendentalism. The piece of Unitarian Universalism that even if you didn't grow up you probably got a little dose of in high school English when you read Emerson or Thoreau. And Transcendentalism has and promotes the high ideal of each individual spirit's being able to access the deepest truths and meaning of life. They, like Unitarians in general, like many of us, were rebelling against traditions that held them down in dogmatism and conformity. And that is a very important move forward for freedom. And of course, it's epitomized in Emerson's possibly most famous essay, Self-Reliance, which includes statements like this. I must be myself. I cannot break myself any longer for you or you. Nothing can bring you peace but yourself. And even we must go alone. And yet, Transcendentalism also nurtured various practices to aid the search for truth and meaning, and while some were quite solitary, such as journal keeping, one notable one was not conversation. And for the person who perhaps showed the greatest depths of what conversation could do for the individual spirit to help us to access greater meanings and truths, we should turn to somebody you probably didn't read in your high school English class, Margaret Fuller. Margaret Fuller was born in 1810 and lived only 40 years before a shipwreck within sight of Fire Island off the coast of New York killed her and her family. But in that time, she accomplished a tremendous amount to shape both Transcendentalism and the life of the mind in our country. She was editor of The Dial, the Transcendentalist journal that put forth many of these ideas. She was an articulator herself of Transcendentalist philosophy and what it meant. She was a journalist, a book reviewer. She was one of the foremost public intellectuals of her time. And one of the things that she did within all that busy schedule was develop salons in Boston, where she lived, a forum for conversation. That's what she called them, actually, conversations. Now, there was an explicitly feminist project to this. She wanted to provide an opportunity for women, and she specifically invited women into these conversations, to make up for the terrible lack of formal and higher education that was provided to most women in that time. And yet, she could have created a lecture series, she could have had a list of great books that they ought to absorb, to catch up with the men who had gone off to Harvard College, but she didn't do that. She created conversations. I think that's a lot of what we do here we create venues for a community conversation. For example, in the next few weeks, we will be starting up our chalice circles for next year, and you can read a lot more about how to go to a sample session. There are a few in September or sign up for a chalice circle this year in your order of service. There are many other small groups, our women's groups and men's groups and Elder Journey and Parent Journey and the Forum and the Brown Bags books groups, and any place that a few people gather to converse, to share something about their own search and hear another search so as to help each other along. Whether you're part of one of these small groups, which I highly recommend, or not, being a part of this community is being in conversation. The salon is open, and it will help you. New members, longtime members, considering it members, on your search for meaning and truth. I guess I'm so attached to chalice circles, I promote them so enthusiastically, not only because the board has rightly determined that connecting people to small groups is a wonderful way to live out our ministry, to help them find, all of you, find what you're looking for here. But because I've been in groups, am in a group right now, much like them, and I just want to let you know how fabulous it is and invite you in. The group I'm a part of that I want to describe to you for a moment is called Women's R&R. It's for Unitarian Universalist clergy, female clergy in our area. It's for any UU women clergy, but you got to be able to get to Oakland on a certain Wednesday of the month. R&R is for reading and reflection, or maybe rest and relaxation. I think of it also as there's some that one of those R's is for responsibility. Because we make a lot of promises to each other. It's structured very much like many of our small groups here, especially the chalice circles. And we say aloud each time we meet, which we do once a month, each time we meet, we say what we promise each other. We promise each other that we'll be there. And there are months that I don't have time. I just don't have time. But I promised, and it's important for me to be there for myself and others. So I have very rarely missed it. We promise that we'll share the time for talking so that everyone has time to speak and to listen reflectively. That we'll prepare, that we'll do our reading and our thinking, that we will bring our best selves to the conversation. And we promise to proactively invite in every female colleague who comes into our area. That our last line of our covenant together is, the more the merrier. There's tremendous freedom in this group as well. Each of us goes places we could never have gone alone. Each of us makes discoveries that we didn't make except in that sparkling light of that conversation. Now, you can see how responsibility is important in the search for truth. That when you have to articulate your ideas to somebody else, when you have to show that they have reason behind them, that you can be clear about them, well, that helps you to clarify and come up with good ideas. That's a kind of a responsibility and accountability that a group helps us to. But there's also an accountability in the search for meaning that takes a gentler form, the form of support. For example, when you're in a group like that and you are trying to find meaning in the midst of a loss, and bringing just such things is one of the things that groups are for, the circle of community helps by listening and caring, and by example more than words, reminding you that grief is not the final word. That too is a kind of responsibility to which a group holds us and holds one another. So freedom and responsibility balance each other, yes. But as you may already be beginning to hear in these examples, there's something still more complex, more intertwined about these two values. And that is that there is no true freedom without responsibility, without accountability. It's just how freedom works. Let me give you a couple of examples. Veronica and I are equally free to play Chopin. No one is stopping us, either one of us. And yet, only the one who has put in the discipline, as Howard Thurman says, has taken responsibility, actually is free to play that glorious music, to make good on that desire. It's not me. Or for another example, in the resources I give to people planning a wedding are various phrases to say, for example, as they exchange rings. And one of these is, "With this ring, I consecrate myself to you and you to me to be bound and freed by our love." Why bound and freed? Because the love between people binds them. It restricts and restrains them. When you are in a relationship with someone, whether it's a marriage or a friendship or a chalice circle, you can't just say whatever comes into your head. You have committed to be kind and honest. You can't just do whatever you feel like doing. When you're married, you're bound by a promise to consider your partner's needs. Where to live, what job to pursue, even what to do that evening, decisions that maybe you used to make consulting nobody but yourself, are now decisions that include someone else. Love binds us. All relationships do. And they free us. You know how. Take a moment right now. Reflect on a relationship, a happy relationship, that asks a lot of you. Maybe as you think about it, you'll feel your heart soar. Like in that hymn, "I wish I could be like a bird in the sky. How sweet it would be if I found I could fly." Here's the thing, that freedom comes not in spite of being bound to each other, not in spite of this relationship asking so much of you, but because of it. It is the commitment we make to others, to a baby son, to a spouse, to a circle of friends, to a group of people at the church to whom we've promised, "Yes, I will be there every second and fourth Tuesday." It is that commitment that makes it possible to discover depths of ourselves and vistas of life that were formerly hidden. Howard Thurman again lays it right out there. There can be no personal freedom where there is not an initial personal surrender. And Matt's story illustrates beautifully, and perhaps the one you just thought about does as well, that there are things about ourselves, things about life, that we learn through our relationships. And only through our relationships. And often we learn them best from the relationships that bind us the closest, that ask the greatest commitment of us. As we will shortly remind ourselves in our new member welcome ceremony, it is we who make this community all that we want it to be. I hope that all of you find it and make it a rich conversation that calls us all into responsibility and frees us to fly to heights we did not even know were possible. So may it be. And now we have some new members to